Mr. Scott, reel two. The next thing really is the move to Northern Ireland station and to Dungannon. What do you recall of that?
Well, this is where the other room comes in for the general logistics of a move of the regiment, and you get all your reports coming in from squadrons, you know, the advanced parties going there, all the transport, and the move over successfully.
What do you remember about the move?
Great. You jump into a vehicle, you go over and you get to join a boat, and you go over the other side, and you travel to Dungannon.
Do you remember this problem they had with the train on the way into Dungannon?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I know we went at night. We went through Dumfries to Stranraer.
And what about Dungannon? What was the setup in Dungannon?
Well, I enjoyed Dungannon. There was an area of the town known as the Irish part, to which you were not supposed to go. It was out of bounds. The people of Dungannon were very friendly towards us. We did a lot of good tank training there.
What about the, well, take a moment of time. How did you get on with the local people?
Very well.
What about the people in the prohibited quarter? Do you see what I mean?
Well, I never came across any. We had a regimental dance once out of the living room, and she was in the Irish part of the town, and her parents, invited them for a cup of coffee, and her parents said, "Better you stay here till it's dark before you go back." And I said, because her son was in the army, and he had to change his uniform at for Stranraer or Belfast and go into the city for coming home. But I never found any antagonism at all. No, not at all.
And what about the training?
Well, the training's advancing now. We're getting fitter. I remember a squadron march from different away in 3-ton lorries and it's like you're going to march in the morning, march back to Dungannon.
And you were on that?
Yeah.
So they put the office out on it as well?
Okay, so that's right. Okay, you became involved in things just to keep fit. I played football for the squadron.
What were the route marches like? Sorry?
No, it was. I found that to be a very, that one was a very, very, very stringent one, that, because the officer in charge who took it, his feet were blistered completely, and he made us march to attention with all anything into Dungannon coming back. He was suffering. We all were.
Which officer was it?
This is the whole idea. You've got to stretch yourself.
Which officer was it? And what other training would you be included in?
Well, I went on an administrative course and succeeded in becoming fit and got distinguished.
Is that, that's from Ireland?
No, that was from Ireland.
Right, okay.
No, you become involved in route marches and things like that, where you've got to keep all your fighting men fit as well. But you're working a lot of hours in orderly room, don't get things really important for certain reasons. But you became, well, I did feel that you were something special, you were on a higher level, you were organizing the movement of the regiment. I find this thrilling.
What about the move to Bessbrook? That was December 4th.
Down the road to Bessbrook, that's right on the border. You're getting an element there now that you're very close to Ireland where the lights were still on. And you know where the Germans could see that with Ireland right up to there. Found the people there very, very good, very happy, supportive. As a matter of fact, they wrote or sent a telegram to the government saying they didn't want the fact and part for Germany to move at Christmas time.
That would be when you left Dungannon, yeah. Anything happened at Bessbrook? Okay, the next thing is Whitby, moved to Whitby. And that's where they were converted into an armoured regiment, as opposed to a sort of cavalry squadron with Mark 6Ps.
We went over there and they formed the 29th Armour Brigade, didn't we? So I looked upon ourselves as being an armour regiment, we've never been anything else, but they went over there and formed the 29th Armour Brigade, which was ourselves, 23rd Hussars and 24th Lancers.
And what tanks did you get then? Would you be aware?
I think they were cruisers and crusaders, I think. And we had Cromwells or something. If you read books such as Death by Design, you'll find out a number of different tanks that they brought forward which were not efficient with armor or weren't efficient with guns and all this, and they kept trying to change them until the Marshall Plan, when we got the Shermans coming in.
So all these tanks, Crusaders, Valentines, Matildas, you think were all faulty?
No, that's a very difficult. They were underarmed. The weaponry was not so good. They were fast, good suspension, but the medical guys have been really dead by the time.
It's not so much what you've read, but what you remember.
Yes. Well, the 2-pounders or 6-pounders on things like that. 2-pounders were an effective gun.
So, anything else about your time at Whitby?
Did a lot of tank training in the East Riding.
But you wouldn't be involved in most of that?
Just exactly on as long as I could.
As what? As what?
Just to go and see the whole operation. I would never get in there as a tank crew, but a tank crew were training.
But you'd go along on the exercises? Okay. Did you want to? Were you starting to want to?
Yes.
Now,
back in my mind for a long, long time.
The next thing, then they moved to the Hove Brighton area. I think there's a couple of postings around Hove and Brighton in that time.
At a Stanford Park. The regimental headquarters was 2nd Avenue Hove. And that was more of a defensive measure. Now that that was more like a patrolling for south of the UK. Did we present about the road? Was that not after Dunkirk? That was after Dunkirk.
No, that was May 1942 to August 1942.
That was when we were expecting that Hitler would attack, wasn't it, over the Channel?
No, that was when you were at Farnham. I think you're mixing the two up.
I can understand that. But that was the only defences they had in the south of England, as far as I'm aware.
I think they had a few more by 1942. I don't know.
I don't know. I thought that was one of our main reasons.
So you're on coastal defence, you reckon, in the Hove?
I thought that was the situation geographically.
And anything particular happened there? No. The next move would be to Bury St Edmunds, a camp called Farnham. Fordham. Anything there? They were there about 2 months before they went to Chippenham, which is near Newmarket.
Newmarket? Fordham was only a short time there. Chippenham was good.
What do you remember of Chippenham?
Well, that's when we really I felt that we were at an armour brigade, because we were all in Chippenham Estate. Doing a lot of tank training. Yes, Chippenham was good. I felt we're starting to put the ice on the cake. You can become a good regiment, a good brigade.
But you were still in the RHQ.
I did not certain when I changed. I went to.
You went on this course from Chippenham, didn't you? Tell me about that.
It was just vacancies come along for courses. This was for senior NCOs, administrative course, the Brockenhurst. And once again, you're getting logistics explained to you at a higher level. Enjoyed that course.
What rank
were you? It hit me, because I was fascinated with the whole ramification of the operations. But
what rank were you by then?
Sergeant.
You'd become a sergeant. When had that happened?
This one, to go on that course.
That's when it happened.
Senior NCO.
And what about the sergeant's mess? What it was like?
Great. Very good.
In what way?
It's excellent. Really.
What did it offer you, the sergeant's mess?
In the way of food.
In the way of anything, I mean.
Well, what did it offer you? It was a great sensation to, as the officers have their mess, sergeants, that's all warrant officers and sergeants, senior NCOs, this is a place where you felt that you were something apart, you're a little bit higher in the ladder. You met your people, you understood, you discussed things.
Was it a hut? Was it a hut? A hut?
No, it wasn't even a hut. Was it a... You didn't queue up for your food, you went in there and... More or less similar to an officer's mess, you were sitting down in your own ranks, and people served you who were on duty at the sergeant's mess. You had your bar, you had your reading room, and normally the officer picks their best buildings, wherever possible, for the officer's mess. And the sergeants had come along, you know, and he chose the next best building. Normally we were in substantial places, buildings.
So not just a hut. Oh, that's a. And what about drinking? Was much? Was it a hard drinking mess, or because some are and some aren't?
I wouldn't think it was a hard drinking, but it's like everything else in life. Some people take more than others. I didn't drink.
You didn't drink at all.
Not at that time.
And you were now a sergeant in the office, the RHQ office.
Well, I don't know when I'm thinking it was about Chippenham that I indicated to them I wanted to do something better.
Now, what do you mean by that? You'd been very happy in the sergeant, in the RSU. Can you tell me what was going on in your mind?
I felt that I wanted to do something more active.
Why?
Because I felt that to be a clerk, to do clerical administrative work, I felt I wanted to be in action. I did. It was just something within my ear. Wanted to do that.
So you asked
for... I did, yes, I asked.
And did you ask to actually go to tank corps, just to go to company, to squadron headquarters? What did you ask for?
I went and said that I wished to become a fighting soldier.
So tank crew?
Yes, a tank crew, and a fighting crew. And it's quite difficult now. I can understand the difficulty. I'm a sergeant, an administrative sergeant. You haven't been working hand in glove with the tank crews, etc. And Major Neymar C Squadron said, you will accept me. And I went into a fair bit of intensive training on tanks.
Now, which tank were you training with?
Just before we got the Shermans. Mainly Shermans, maybe Shermans.
Well, I think there was the Crusader you had at Chippenham before the...
We had
the
what?
Crusader.
Crusader.
Now, what did you think of the Crusader? Was that the first tank you ever had then, the Crusader? What did you think of the Crusader?
Fast, good suspension, as I said, undergunned. And I don't think the ammo was too good.
And what were the role of the crew members in the Crusader? What did each member of the crew do?
Driver, co-driver, gunner. Well, it's not a commander. That's in a five-man crew, but these were only four-man crews in there. So you had driver, co-driver, gunner operator, and commander.
And you were training... Did you train in all these roles, or did you just train as a tank commander?
I went as a tank commander.
So you didn't learn to drive a tank or the wireless operating or the gunning?
Not at that time.
Now... How did they train you as a tank commander? What was the job of tank commander in theory? We'll come to in practice when you get to France. But what about, what were they trying to train you in England as a tank commander?
One. Movement. Utilisation of ground. That's your contours. Keeping out of sight. Using the ground. Control of your tank by wireless. You're adding... We have two radios, a B-set and an A-set. B-set, you control your own troop, your troop of three tanks, right? You've got an officer, a sergeant, and a corporal. There's your three commanders. Following, they're all exercises you're going at, you know, simulated manoeuvre. And the most difficult thing I found was reading maps, going across country. You know, you're involved in directing a driver, you're involved in listening to your orders coming over, you're involved in telling your gunner to drive to Sabah's flight and things like that. And one of the most difficult things that I've found is if your driver is facing that way, the front of your tank, and your Sabah's with a gun, and you're facing that way, and your driver's going that way to give commands, you've got to know how many reports coming back, where the enemy is situated and what it is, and you mark up your map and find it. And then all of a sudden somebody says, C squadron will move to the east flank or something like that. And the next thing comes from your C commander, two troops will do that, and you go forward. And this is what the movement of time, concealment, gun control of your gunner, your wireless operation. It was all quite involved at times, quite involved.
And so you sounds like you were on this for a while at Chippenham. And anything else happened at Chippenham before we go to Rudston, Bridlington, and the arrival of the Shermans proper?
Chippenham, that's what I said. I found that we were a brigade there. That's when I felt we were a good brigade. We were an effective brigade. I'm still doing very extensive training, but that's all you do. But to be effective in the field, you've got to have effective people in your administration. One follows the other.
Now, I just want to pick up, what about some of the colonels you'd had? Because you'd had a few by then. Yes. This is going back a bit, but if we just drop it in. He was the first. Now, the chap who followed, he left in Ireland, I think, and was it Sword? Well, who's the next one you remember?
E.S. Sword.
What was he like?
Didn't come in contact very much with him. He was a regular. I don't know how the regulars took the territorial army. E.S. Sword, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. And what about, then there was Cooper.
K.C. Cooper, World Tank Regiment.
What did you think of him? Because he's
Well, can I just, if I tell you the story, you might just, he's over 6 feet tall. He had been the British Army heavyweight boxing champion. He had a nose that was bashed in. He, very determined man, he thought the Territorial Army, this is his first Territorial Army, he thought that we mixed too much together. That while we were on duty, we were on duty, but when we went off duty, we were still pals, you know, as if we were, and he didn't care much for this. So he selected, he arranged that drill sergeants would come up from the guards to knock us into shape. And I remember being out in the ordinary room when I was at Whitby. I'll tell you that. Knock on the door, and the sergeant major was David Granger. This man came in, he jumped about 3 feet in the air and he came down, and the dust from the floorboard came out between the floorboard. Sergeant Straw, Scotland Guard, reporting for duty, sir. And everybody who even made to this body was very effective. So Granger got around it very long, just told the orderly to take him to the sergeant's mess. And for 3 days, 4 days, it's like, what's your name? Scott. It's not Scott, it's not your name. Your name is Hart. What day is it? It's Tuesday. Tuesday what? Tuesday sergeant. No, it's Wednesday. It's Wednesday night. And this was the sort of thing he went. But by the end of the week or 2 weeks there, he was sitting down playing cards with us, and we were starting to ruin the guards, the old sergeants. And they put up two or three. And then he arranged, K.G. Cooper still arranged, that if Mark Green would come from, we would go to the guards. And I, at that time, I went down to the Welsh Guards for a 4 to 6 weeks course on drill. And so therefore, I was in the tank regiment then. I was in the, you know, in the tanks. And I went down with some quick doing. So I was in the tank by that time. Now let me say, Whitby.
Don't you mean Bridlington?
What?
Don't you mean Bridlington?
The Bridlington, that's how well. Whitby, that's how it
was. Because otherwise, it's nearly a year before when you said. Whichever. Mm-hmm. Okay, what was the drill course like?
Killer.
In what way?
Or there's not a lot of PT in it, which I liked it very much. Down to Kingston there with the big cables and doing exercise and all this. But it was a drill. That was the whole idea, was to get drill and discipline. Immediate reactions to your, toward the command. And the old pacemaking, you know, the sergeant major with the pacemakers marching along there. And very honestly, they speeded up your commands and your orders by a half a pace to a pace. And you're more effective, really was. Give you, within yourself, a better idea how you're going to move your own troop when you come back. Well, you're great. And then, this is when you saw the people who mixed and had the drinks, you see, because there was a good mess there. But I went there with one of my good friends, and he was like me, very keen on athletics and things like that. And we felt that we were much smarter, much better drill instructors, and our troops benefited from it later on, too.
Now, another thing about Cooper is he's supposed to have shifted the officers about as he wanted to get them where he wanted and to bring in a lot of new officers with battle experience. Were you aware of that going on?
Well, I'm having difficulty understanding. Alistair Spencer and the Seasborn were he went left. But I thought this was through, not Casey Cooper, but one through Marshall.
Montgomery. Mm-hmm. Now, what happened there? Well, what was your impression of what happened to Ned? Because he did leave C Squadron, didn't he?
Huh?
He did leave C Squadron before you went to France. What had happened?
Just before he went to France, because he came up to see us before Goodwood, before we went in there, that's all. But yes, that happened there. That we tried to introduce as many war-experienced people as possible. So he was he got rid of one regiment, didn't he? Go to the Sub-Royal Tank Regiment into Brigade. Repeating itself there, what Major Mayen went out, that happened in most of the regiment, they're losing certain people and they went to other regiment. Try a second forward. Well, did Nichols follow Mayen? Because I went to the recce troop.
I'm not sure.
But I went to the record. No, I was never in C Squadron when Nairn was away. According to what we were told there is that Montgomery wanted every regiment to have their own record troop. And the record troop there was reformed from people who could read maps and go forward seeking this report.
So you were only in C Company in England?
I was in C Squadron in England.
Sorry, sir.
And then went to the record troop and formed it.
Now, had you trained with Shermans before you went?
Yes.
Well, let's talk about that before we talk about the record troop then. What did you think of the Shermans?
Liked it.
Could you tell us just as much detail as you want about the Sherman, what it was like as a tank?
Well, first of all, it stood a bit higher. And that was one thing that scared us a little bit. It was a bit higher and a bigger target. It had a better gun and a 75mm gun. It had a 5-man crew. A co-driver, driver, wireless operator, gunner, and the commander. Mechanically, it was perfect. Didn't break down very often. We liked it very much indeed. Yes, you could depend on it very, very much mechanically, not breaking down. 75mm is still a better gun, but not a good gun. Not against the 88. When they did arrive, they arrived without certain things like watches and compasses, which had been confiscated at docks out of side of the Atlantic. But yes, I think with them, I liked this Sherman. Then we brought in another Sherman called, but they had the same.
Firefly.
By the Firefly.
And you saw that? Were you on that one as well?
No. There was only one allocated to each troop, and they were held in reserve and brought up when they were required.
Now, what was it like being inside a Sherman? When it was going along, the sort of environment of the tank.
I know it very, very well. I'm claustrophobic. Alright. Felt very, very much for the driver and co-driver especially, who are down, the hatches down, and they're there. And the gun could be anywhere over their hatches. I got my head out of the turret, so I'm quite happy. But when you bring down the breech of the gun, the 75 millimeter, all of a sudden you're jammed in. You're one of the operators at that time, your gun is down there in front of you. And for them it must have been fairly dreadful. But you work as a team. Now this is where all your training comes into being. When you say this, they do it. This is where your guard drill comes in. You get them all speeded up, immediate reaction, and you become a good tank crew, you become a good tank troop. I find it quite alarming at times in a tank.
Not in training or when you got to France?
In France, okay. In training, it's all right. Not really.
What's the noise? What was the noise like in a tank?
Not too bad. You've got a big fan going behind you all the time, but you've got your earphones on, so you're not hearing anything.
What about the smell of the engine? Or?
Oh, yes. You get the smell of cord light and the smell of an engine. It can be hot. It can be very cold. Especially very cold.
Can we have a look at just a bit what each person did? The driver, they just drove the tank. Did they have any other responsibilities?
Co-driver, yes. You've got a machine gun with them.
But they had no controls. It was just a machine gun. They didn't have any driving controls.
No.
And that would be...
And then the hatch closed down. They're sitting there. And their escape hatch is between their legs. If you can move it, it's a steel thing. And if you're stuck, the gun could be over your hat. You have to go out there. It must be an awful thought for them.
So and they operated the Browning hull gun. And then the gunner operated the Browning turret gun and the 75mm.
Coaxially mounted, you see.
What do you mean by coaxial? Can you just explain for them?
Well, when you move your gun, they're both going the same way, the same thing. And the clever thing to do with to get your machine gun if possible, as near the target as possible, then have your big gun hit them, quickly.
So... And then the wireless operator had the 19 set, and they loaded the gun and looked after the ammunition. Would that be correct?
11 set and 19 set, that's right. And they loaded the gun. So in actual fact, you in the tank, they're one complete unit. And this man with his head at the top says, driver right, driver left. And he just reacted. He's only got a small battery, you know. And it's straight ahead. So he reacts. This is where the teamwork comes in. He reacts and he comes up. And your gunner gets his command. He'll say, Travers right, Travers left. And you could over command him because the commander had a power Travers to take over from the gunner if he wanted to switch to another target. So he can countermand what the gunner was going to be doing by going into another target. And with the breech down, the gun fires, and the shell case comes down to the canvas bag.
So, I mean, that's what you were training on. were you still with the Sherman when you went up to Rudston and Bridlington? That's where they got them. So you'd be training on the exercises they had there. Do you remember Black Cock and Eagle? Those were the two big ones. What do you remember of those two big exercises?
Well, one of them was supposed to live off the ground. One of them, the way down the south of England, I can't recall which one it was. So. But my Sherman was up against a hedge, and the gun was traversed that way. And this man came up and said, your tank has been knocked out. And I said, why? And camouflage. He said, you've been looking all this exercise to find a tank with a gun out that way. How they can transport it back to workshops. And there you are. He left him really to get that tank back. It was hard work. You're living on the ground, you're living in, sleeping with tanks, your tanks, you know. Hit your squad and bring up your rations, water. So this is where the logistics come in there.